Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Elizabeth Carney. I'm with the club's Business and Leadership Forum, and your host for today's program, which is entitled Eight Elements to Transform Your Personal Brand, Your Career, and Life. We invite our audience to visit us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org to learn more about the many fine program and events that are held here at the club. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Ellen Loyen. Ellen Loyen, first known as America's leader in personal branding, was one of the first women in sales at IBM and later at Xerox, where she was a top producing sales rep, sales manager, and sales trainer. For over two decades, Ellen has been branding divisions of major corporations. She's launched countless startups and has helped thousands of people in over 60 countries advance their careers. Ellen has a BA in philosophy from Temple University. She's the author of Branded for Life, Eight Elements to Transform Your Personal Brand, Career, and Life. Ellen is a brand communicator for CBS News, The Wall Street Journal, and KGO Radio. Some of Ellen's clients include Goldman Sachs, Visa, Cisco, Hewlett-Packard, Campbell Soup Company, Oracle, and eBay. In her presentation today, she will share her eight elements of influence and what it takes to build an influential and compelling personal brand. Please join me in welcoming Ellen Loyen back for her fifth Commonwealth Club visit.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. We were taking some photos, so I just wanted to get that out of the way. I am so excited to be back here. As you heard Elizabeth say, it's my fifth time here. And it is such an honor to be, as a professional speaker and trainer, it's such an honor to be invited to this very prestigious venue. And it doesn't escape me that this is Thanksgiving week, and this has always been a very important holiday to me since I was a little girl. Ah, I'm getting emotional. Anyway, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that you all came out tonight on a pre-Thanksgiving holiday week. I really appreciate it. The weather held up nicely for us. San Francisco finally got some rain, but it stopped long enough for all of you to come out and enjoy the evening with me. So I'm just so excited to be back here for the fifth time. That's a big, major career accomplishment for me. And now to be back with my book and as a best-selling author, it's just a dream come true. So I just want you to know how much I appreciate all of you being here. We'll have a book signing afterwards. I hope many of you buy the book. We had a little problem with our credit card square thing. So if you have $20 and you want a book signed, come see me in the back. I'd love to do that for you. So in this whole spirit of gratitude and appreciation, I have to tell you that the greatest thing you can do for your personal brand is to live your life with a spirit of gratitude. And one of my mentors, some of you may know her, Lynn Twist, who is the founder of the Pachamama Alliance to Save the Amazon Rainforest. I had the very good fortune of going to the Amazon rainforest with Lynn and a few other people the summer before last, and I just came from a brunch at Lynn's last Saturday here in San Francisco in her gorgeous stately home. And her favorite quote in her book, The Soul of Money, if you haven't read it, go get it. I love to recommend other people's books as well as my own. Her big line is, what you appreciate appreciates. And that is so important to your personal brand. And I'm here today to have you fall in love with yourself and what you've got of value to offer the world. And that's what my work is all about. So I'm really excited to be here at this very esteemed venue with all of you tonight, pre-Thanksgiving, so that you can learn how to be more grateful and self-appreciating for all the value you've worked so hard to accrue in your life. So, without further ado, I'm going to jump into my presentation and share with you my eight elements of influence and how to build a compelling and successful personal brand. So, here we go. We're going on a branding journey together. My first question of this audience is, raise your hand if you already have a personal brand. Raise your hand high if you have a personal brand. Okay, so this is San Francisco, and we're so much more sophisticated here than most places. Excuse me for saying so, but it's true. So in a lot of places I speak all over the world, one or two hands go up. So quite a few went up in this audience, but not everybody's hand went up in this audience. And I'm here to tell you that each and every one of you has a personal brand. And you have a personal brand whether you're managing it or not. Because if you're not managing it, we're branding you by default. Because when we hear your name, several perceptions automatically come to mind. But are they the perceptions you would choose us to have? Your career could depend on it. So starting today, I'd like you to really take hold and manage your personal brand. And because this is a book signing tonight, I will tell you that I wrote my book, not like a boring how-to business book, but I wrote it more like a novel with an introverted Silicon Valley Indian-born engineer and his American-born self-employed wife, who's a financial planner, who's very extroverted. So wherever you fall on that spectrum, introverted, extroverted, or somewhere in between, you can follow the adventures of Sanjay and Susan as they build their personal brand in my book, and follow along with all my branding templates and build your own personal brand. So I'm going to teach you a little bit of foundational stuff tonight. Hopefully you'll enjoy my book and you'll go home and start your branding process right away. Because you do not want to be branded by default. You want to intentionally take hold of your brand and manage the perceptions that the world has of you. Fair deal? Are you willing to look at your personal brands in a different way than perhaps ever before? I hope so. Okay, I like this audience. Talk back to me. Let's get rowdy. This is good. I love it. Okay, so this slide is branding at a glance, and what is shown on here is the word brand right in the middle, and underneath the word brand are the words emotional connection. And the reason why those words emotional connection are so important to building your personal brand is because brands are felt. We feel your brand, or we don't. We connect with you emotionally, or we don't. And whether you know it or not, we all exude a certain energy. And sometimes the energy feels like a Debbie Downer energy. We don't want that kind of energy. We all know people like that. When they enter a room, the vibe of the whole room goes down. I see heads nodding, so I know you agree with me. So emotional connection is a very important component of your personal brand. And then you'll see differentiation. That's another very important component. And thank goodness most people don't know what's so special and different about them, or I wouldn't have a job. Because most people say to me, oh, Ellen, I'm just an engineer, or I'm just a realtor, or I'm just a psychologist, or I'm just a this or a that. And I say to them, no, you're not. You've got so much more going for you. Because most of us need our value reflected back to us, and that's what I do with my branding process and with my book. You may not think you have a personal brand that's very distinctive or different, but you do, because you are unique. So we try to encapsulate, we do encapsulate that uniqueness that you have. Then you see the words verifiable value. Now that's very important too, because it's not just about what you say is so terrific and valuable about you and your personal brand, but what do other people have to say about you? So no matter how you work with me, whether we work one-on-one privately in a coaching atmosphere, or you're at a corporate training, I do a lot of those all over the world, or you're at the Commonwealth Club at a keynote talk, as you all are tonight, I want you to start thinking about who can you ask and use the personal impact survey in the back of my book to send these out to five people that you know, five people whose opinion of you matters. So, and it's usually good to get a cross-section of folks. And if you don't buy my book, that's fine too, because I'm going to give you some of those questions. So for those note takers, you may want to take some notes. And the first thing you want to know is, how did that person come to work with you? It's good to put that in a context. And then you want to know, what's the greatest benefit they received as a result of your work? And how could you improve their your services for that person? And the million-dollar question is, how would you describe my services to somebody who might be interested in blank?
buying a home, in engineering, whatever your profession is. Because it's really good to get a clear picture of how people are holding you in their minds. What do they think about you? What's top of mind? And here's something you can all do over your Thanksgiving holiday when you're with your family members. Or maybe you don't want to do this with family. I was just thinking about that. Never mind. If you come from a family, anything like my family, you don't want to do this at the Thanksgiving table. You could go home in tears. But if you're with normal people, here's what you can do. You can ask everyone at that Thanksgiving table for three adjectives that best describe you. And when you go back to work on Monday, it's better to do it in the workplace, frankly. So I always suggest my clients ask five people for three adjectives that best describe them. Then you're going to wind up with 15 adjectives. Now, if you find these adjectives are all over the map, then something's a little wrong with your brand because you're not in total alignment. People are seeing you all different ways. But I think what most of you are going to find out, there's going to be a lot of overlap. A lot of people are going to agree that they see you a certain way. So that's the verifiable value. And then there's this million-dollar word in marketing and branding called positioning. And positioning, according to Webster's Dictionary, or Webster's Business Dictionary, or excuse me, it's not even Webster, excuse me, it's just the Business Dictionary online. Pardon me, Webster. Anyway, positioning aims to occupy a distinct position in the minds of your customer, or you could say the minds of the people you most want to influence. And most people don't really understand positioning. It's what do people, what if the brain were a filing cabinet, which it is, what are they filing your brand and you under? So let's play a little game with this group, and I'm going to be really tough on this game. There's some rules here, okay? So I'm going to ask this wonderful audience, and don't shout out an answer. I'm going to have you all answer in unison on the count of three. So I'm going to have you think about, and this is to illustrate the power of positioning as it relates to you and your personal brand. So I'm going to ask you to think of a European car. Don't shout out any names until the count of three. And this particular car manufacturer was so brilliant in their positioning because they got to the attribute of safety, don't shout out the name, before anyone else did. They hooked up their brand name with the attribute of safety. And it's not necessarily that they have the safest car on the road, but they did such a great job convincing all of us that they do. Because when we think of that brand name, we immediately think of safety and vice versa. So on the count of three, I want you to yell out as loud as you can the name of the car I'm thinking of. One, two, three.
Volvo.
Yes, I heard a little Mercedes over here. That's okay. I always do. I usually hear a BMW in the back. But the whole room basically said Volvo. Now, wouldn't you love your brand position to be that clear? It can be when you properly brand yourself. So that is the power of branding. So I'd like you to just take a minute, maybe even jot something down. What are some key attributes you'd like to be associated when people first hear your name? What are some of those things you want them to associate with you and your personal brand? I see some wheels turning up here. Anybody want to shout out what they would like to be thought of in terms of an attribute? Raise your hand if you have an idea of that. Yes, in the back. Intimate?
Activist.
Oh, I love that. Activist. Okay, we're in San Francisco. Why not? Okay, activist. Good. You make things happen. And you have a cause. That's what I think of when I think. Is that correct? Perfect. Yes.
Insightful.
Insightful. Wonderful. We like to work with insightful people. Okay, so I think you got the hang of it, right? Good. So there's our favorite former Bay Area person, Steve Jobs. And Apple has such incredible customer loyalty because of the brand. And even though Steve Jobs is dearly departed now for several years, we still associate that Apple brand with the person who started it all. And it's really wonderful when you think about it. But really, when we think about the Apple brand, I want you to think about your own personal brands this way too. We think about three things. We think about the visual of the Apple brand. So their products are so sexy and beautiful, and I've got an Apple monitor on my desk and it makes my whole office glow. Today I just noticed that the little apple at the bottom is a mirror. I never even noticed that before. Did anyone else ever? I've had this for almost 2 years. Today I just noticed a reflection, a beautiful reflection of the rain coming through the window, and I saw it in my little Apple logo at the bottom of my big monitor. Just sharing that with you. But that's the excitement of that visual. So what's your visual brand, and what does it say about you? You know, I do a lot of work in the Silicon Valley, and no offense, I know some of you work down there. This is a pretty classy crowd tonight, actually, so I'm not speaking to any of you people. But I do a lot of business down in the Silicon Valley, and some of these people look the way I look when I'm cleaning my garage. So, and they go to work like this every day, and when I tell them to take it up a notch, I think that just means to take a shower or something. I'm not sure. But take it up a notch from wherever you are, because the visual of your personal brand really matters. So I used to fight with this one woman, female engineer, and she said, I don't wear makeup, and I don't want to wear makeup. I said, great, keep your job, stay there forever, and don't be visible. You know, sometimes you just have to take it up a notch, whatever that means. But I don't mean Botox and all those other things, by the way. I'm the poster girl for a face that moves. Just saying. Okay, anyway, so then there's the emotional. The emotional is so important because people aren't going to do business with you unless they feel emotionally connected to you. An emotional connection has a lot to do with likability and trust and all of those things that are more nonverbal. We feel our way into those things. So very important to make those all-important emotional connections with people. And then there's the rational. Now, if Apple products didn't work and didn't perform the way we wanted them to, it wouldn't matter how beautiful they look. And it wouldn't matter how loyal we are to the brand and how much we love the brand. We probably wouldn't buy their products if they didn't work the way they were promised to work. So do you deliver on your promise? And let me tell you, a very important component of branding is consistency. You know, you have to have a consistent experience every time when you have a brand that's worth having. So how do you want to be perceived by those you most want to influence? Jot down a couple of ideas right now. Just top of mind. How do you want to be perceived by those you most want to influence? I want to tell you that even if you work for a large corporation, and a lot of my clients are large corporations, as you heard in the introduction, I also work with business owners, and I work with people that don't even have businesses or a job. And they can be artists, they can be all kinds of people. I think everyone needs a brand, and everyone can take their brand up a notch. But you're the CEO of your own personal brand. And I'd like you to all consider that. Starting tonight, I want you to manage your personal brand as if it were your own little business. Because guess what? It is. Your company may own your job, excuse me, but you own your career. Oh, what happened here? This thing turned, oh, there we go, just a little delay. Okay, so what are you known for knowing? That's a million-dollar question in branding. What are you known for knowing? A lot of my clients, when they first work with me, say, oh, I'm not really known for anything. There's a lot of modesty going around here. Now, I'm not talking about the Donald Trump art of branding, by the way. I am not talking, and I'm sorry if I've offended any of his followers. I'm really not. But anyway, but I want to suggest to you that instead of tooting your own horn, because the way I help people build a brand and make their brand more visible, it's not about shouting out how great you are. It's quite the contrary. It's about what is your contribution to your company's bottom line? Where do you fit into this equation? If you get a paycheck every 2 weeks, what's the return on investment your company gets from you? What is your personal ROI? And if you don't know that, and you're not really sure of what particular contribution you make to your company's brand, this could have a lot to do with your future job security. So really important, you know, you don't have to work with me, you don't have to buy my book, but please, I really want to know that you're 100% all in to looking at your personal brand after tonight, perhaps in a way you never have before. Raise your hand if you're willing to do that. Oh, I love it. Oh, I love San Francisco. It's why I've lived here for 30 years. Thank you, San Francisco. Okay, the whole Bay Area. You don't have to be from the city. As long as you're from the Bay Area, I love you. Okay, so what are you known for knowing and what's your contribution to your company's brand? By the way, let me share something with you, a little secret about branding. There is absolutely no such thing as objective reality in branding. You want me to repeat that? No? Thank you. Okay. Well, the truth is, there are no best products or services. If your clients think you're the best, then guess what? To them, you are. Because we've all heard this expression, perception is reality. And here's the beauty about branding. You can actually manage the perceptions that people have of you. And it all starts with thinking backwards, asking yourself, how do I want to be perceived by those I most want to influence? And then building a brand forward after coming to that realization. Personal branding is what you're known for, what you're known as, and what you're known for knowing. So in Elizabeth's lovely introduction of me this evening, she said, I'm known as America's leader in personal branding. Well, you know, I couldn't just wake up one morning and call myself that. That would be the Donald Trump art of branding. Just saying. Okay? I'm sorry, I'm very big on this whole thing right now. We'll have to not have this in my future speeches. Anyway, I got so excited about that I almost forgot what I was saying. Oh, I know what I was saying. I'm known as America's leader in personal branding, but I can't just wake up and tell you that. I once did a talk at a conference board conference, and some of you know of the conference board. They put on these very highly esteemed conferences all over the world, and this particular one was for senior marketing executives at the Ritz-Carlton in Lower Manhattan, and in the program, they called me America's leader in personal branding. And I thought, wow, I kind of like that. That's kind of cool. And the conference board's calling me that. So I guess I could quote them and use that. And little did I know back then, that was about 10 years ago, I didn't know that I'd be doing global work in 60 countries. And it is so cute when I go to a foreign country and they go, this is America's leader in personal branding, as if the whole country voted and decided I was America's leader in personal branding. Perception is reality. So you can do stuff like that. You can't make it up, but you can easily quote somebody who said something wonderful about you and use it. Use everything, in other words, when you're building your personal brand. I love to talk about the three sources of power. The three sources of power have so much to do with branding. So let me explain why. This first source of power that you see is the formal authority. So you have the CEO of your company has the formal authority to be in charge of your company. President Obama is the President of the United States. We voted him in. He has the formal authority to have that title. So that's formal authority. That's not so hard to deconstruct and think about. The next one's persuasion, and that's the application of logic and evidence to influence others. I'm very good at persuading people, but I don't like persuasion. And I don't like strategy, because I always feel like if I say this, I can make them say that. And to me, that just feels very contrived. And I've never done business that way. Even when I was a salesperson back in the day at IBM and at Xerox, I didn't like to sell that way. I could sell that way, and a lot of you could be that way and be very strategic, and if I do this, I can get them to do that. But that's not really what I'm all about. What I'm all about is this third source of power. And I love this third source of power, and it's influence. And influence is the ability to affect change without exerting any authority. That is very big. We influence by virtue of how we show up and who we're being when we're doing what we do. So the way I approach branding is more about that. It's not that it's not important what your job is and what you do and the benefits that you provide, but it's equally, if not more important, to be that person you feel good being and that other people like to be around when you do what you do. And I know we've all had the experience of working with some very brilliant and talented people that we just couldn't stand being around. And that's not good. We don't want to make people feel that way. We want to be a pleasure to be around. And let me tell you, there's also, when you are exerting influence and confidence and you feel terrific about your brand, there is something energetic called an attractor factor. And when people are around people like that who are very influential and very charismatic and very attractive, I don't mean how they look, but how they feel to be around energetically, you start feeling better about yourself just being in the presence of people like that. I see heads nodding. I know you know what I'm talking about. I want you all to be that person with that brand, that when you walk into a room, you enrich the presence of everyone in that room. That's what that attractor factor is when you're exuding energetic influence. And you know what I love about this? I've been talking about energetic influence for decades. This is my fifth appearance here, over 20 years, by the way. Commonwealth Club does not have you back every year. They like to give you a little space. Anyway, so I've been touting this message for a long time, and lo and behold, this fabulous book, I told you I sell a lot of other people's books. I hope I sell my own tonight too. But anyway, Compelling People is an excellent book, and it turns out that it's the Harvard research to what I've been saying for over two decades. So I was so excited when this book finally came out and made me legitimate. I actually wrote to the authors and told them so. So the hidden qualities of influence that I've been saying are the hidden qualities of influence turn out to really be the hidden qualities of influence. I love when life works. So guess what? The hidden qualities of influence are equal parts of strength and warmth. And that's the magic formula. That is the magic formula for a successful brand, to have that equal strength and warmth. And I know a lot of times women in particular go overboard one way or the other because we almost have to, because in order to get our equality to where men's equality is, we have to sometimes overcompensate. Men do this too, actually, not just women, but women more than men. So some women, when they feel like, oh, I want to be taken seriously, they become barracudas. They become so strong, they're scary. So that's not good. But sometimes you have to go all the way to one side to find that nice equal ratio. And then on the other side of that equation, sometimes people are so strong and so capable and so competent, they need to warm it up a little bit. I don't know if you remember in the last several elections ago when Hillary Clinton broke down and started crying at the New Hampshire primary, people were like, wow, she's human, she cries. And then people were saying, oh, we love Hillary only if she were warmer. Well, that's a problem when you're a strong woman. And it's even more important to have that equal ratio of strength and warmth if you are a strong woman or an ultra strong man. That warmth just balances it out. Now, if you're too pink and fluffy and too warm and too effusive, you're not taken seriously. So it's a very delicate balance. That's all I'll say. And I do recommend their book, by the way. Charisma is a rare combination of strength and warmth. And I made a study of charisma for over 20 years. And then I started doing my work in corporate America and in corporations all over the world. And they would say to me, Ellen, tone down the charisma thing. We don't want our people to be charismatic. I said, yes, you do, and you don't understand why you do. They said, no, we're not trying to create Madonnas and Lady Gagas here. This is Cisco. And I said, I don't care if it's Cisco. You still want people to have equal parts of strength and warmth, and that is what charisma really is. And when you see leaders that you love and adore, and think about a few to yourself right now, or people in public life like an Oprah, why people love Oprah is because she feels like she could be your best friend, even though she's a media mogul and could buy and sell this whole room and each one of us. We feel so familiar with her because she's been in our living rooms for years, and she has that equal part of strength and warmth, that ratio going in the right direction. And by the way, warm people feel authentic, present, and extra human. A lot of my clients in the Silicon Valley are so busy trying to be superhuman. I'm not talking about superhuman, guys. So if you're one of those superhuman people, forget about it. Find that place deep inside of you that's extra human. That's what we really care about. We want to be around people who are extra human, not superhuman. So charisma turns out to be that it factor, and I still talk about it. I've toned it down a little bit because I do a lot of work in corporate America, but it turns out that charisma is that it factor, and we know it when we see it. Now, this is a Webster Dictionary definition, and I love this definition of charisma. A special quality of leadership that captures the popular imagination and inspires allegiance and devotion. So I want each and every one of your personal brands to be able to capture the imagination of those you most want to influence. And that comes from being charismatic, and it comes from having those equal parts of strength and warmth. And charisma here is defined as an intangible energy that's one of the most powerful forms of persuasion and influence. So it's energetic, And remember I said in the very beginning of my talk, brands are felt? We feel your energy. We feel your confidence. We feel you. So why not manage it and manage those perceptions and feelings? That's what I'm here for. Charismatic people project a deep belief in themselves. They're empathetic. They confidently represent their value and abilities. They have a visceral vitality. You can just feel it. I love this picture of Nelson Mandela I have on the screen right now. He emulates every one of these attributes. He evokes powerful energy, and charismatic people use their talents to serve others. We need to tell some of our political leaders about that. Use your talents to serve others. Okay, that's my big political announcement tonight. Charisma is the third form of authority. This is huge. Max Weber, a German sociologist in the turn of the 20th century, called charisma the third form of authority after law and tradition. That's big. That's worth paying attention to. Branding's about delivering a consistent experience. I said that earlier. This quote I love. This was told to me by a spiritual teacher about 25 years ago, and the more I do my work, the more validity this quote has. The way you do one thing is the way you do everything. That is your personal brand. It is consistent. Now think about someone who is chronically late all the time. You know, they could joke and laugh that off and go, oh, that's my brand, I'm chronically late. Well, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. So if your time is more important than mine, then I'm not gonna hire you. I'm not gonna wanna do business with you. I'm not gonna wanna promote you. So think about your own behavior and think about the consistency of your own behavior. And you know, when I work more deeply, I have some of my mastermind. Raise your hand if you just graduated from my mastermind group. Some of the women are here tonight. Oh, right here in the front row. Oh, and there's some back then, Betty, and I saw another hand go. Anyway, I'm very proud of my graduate women, and they're gonna put their information on a table over there if you wanna do business with them. Now that I promoted my group, I forgot the whole point I wanted to make. I'm not even sure, so I'll move along. I'm glad you got to meet my group. I did have a point there. Does any of my group want to help me out here? No? I know. The way you do one thing is the way. I know. I got there too, Marnie. Thanks. That's all right. We'll figure it out later. Not to worry. So these are my eight elements of influence, and I'm about to take them one by one. So element number one is perhaps the most important of all the elements on some level, because it talks about consciously managing your state of mind. I got to spend 5 days with Eckhart Tolle this summer, who's the author of The Power of Now. And I always thought I was exceedingly present until I spent 5 days with the king of presence, Eckhart Tolle. If you haven't read his book, please get it. You might want to get the audio version. It's very profound. Anyway, it's so important to consciously manage your state of mind, and that's because we feel you and brands are felt, as I said to you earlier. But most importantly, the moment you show up, you energetically broadcast your state of mind and your personal brand. So if you had a fight with your spouse at home before work one day, and then in the parking lot, you button yourself up and you kind of shake it off and you come into work, guess what? Energetically, that's still with you. Because we feel you, we read you nonverbally. So it is so important to consciously manage your state of mind. And body language is 55% of your personal brand and the way we first make a first impression. And then you can see voice tonality. So many of us do work virtually. I do global webinars all over the place. Well, actually, I don't do them all over the place. I stay in one place, and people from all over the place attend. That's a better way to say it. But a lot of us do our work virtually, and our voice tonality is so important. So if you're having a bad day, my suggestion is to do something that makes you feel good energetically, and then go back to work. You know, I don't know about you, but when I was in sales, and I guess we're all in sales to some extent, because we're promoting ourselves and what we're up to, when I was in sales, I would do that dialing for dollars thing, and I'd make sales calls all in one day, feeling really bad about myself. Oh, I hate doing this. Oh my God, I'm doing like a rotary. That shows you how old I am. Dialing for dollars. Okay. I have to take that out of my talk, too. Okay. I'm going to get to relevance as an important part of your personal brand, too. Anyway, but don't do that dialing for dollars. If you're in a low frame of mind, do something to raise your frame of mind. For me, it's taking my black lab Lily out for a walk in the beautiful place I live. I live on a 17-acre organic farm, and the views are just to die for. That's what replenishes me. That's what makes me want to come back to work and resume dialing for dollars. So just saying. Element number two is about having self-awareness. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to point out, they told me in corporate America to take charisma out of my work. So I sort of did, but guess what? My eight elements spell out the word charisma. Ha ha ha. Okay, so element number two is about having self-awareness. And if you're not self-aware, oh, I know what I was going to say about my group. I just remembered, guys. This is cool. When you're self-aware, you understand your own predispositions. And we all have a little shadow effect to ourselves in our life. And we all see the world through the lens of our shadow. And our shadow takes three different versions. It's either I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, or I'm not worthy. So which shadow has your name on it? I will tell you the truth. My shadow is about lovability. So I do want people to like me, and that's important. But when I start getting weird around that, it attracts weirdness. So think about that. That's also part of your brand, these three different dispositions. So are you an I'm not lovable person, a member of my club? Are you an I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough? Because you're always going to find people. If you're an I'm not good enough person, you're always going to find people to remind you you're not good enough. I always find people that remind me, oh, Ellen, you better change your ways if you want to be lovable. And if you feel unworthy, you'll run up against that as well. So we did a lot of work about that in my mastermind group, and that's why I thought of my lovely ladies, all sitting here in the first row. You know, I'm sort of looking beyond you. I didn't even realize I saw Teresa, but I just noticed the rest of you. Okay. Anyway, emotional self-awareness plus emotional self-management equals your emotional intelligence. And a lot of my work is based on the work of Daniel Goleman, the father of emotional intelligence. And the way I do branding is that I want you to have an emotionally intelligent personal brand. I want you to understand the impact you have on other people. So if you're walking around feeling a certain way and your shadow is hanging out there all the time for everyone to see and stomp on, we need to fix that up a little bit. You know, a lot of people tell me, Ellen, you're more like a marketing psychologist or something than a branding expert. And I said, well, the way I do branding is very deep. Because the deeper we excavate, the more information we find out. And you're also interesting. There's a lot of stuff in there that needs excavation. And especially most of the people I work with are very modest. I work with a lot of engineer types. And they don't feel comfortable talking about themselves and self-promoting. So we have to find other ways for them to have these moments of self-appreciation, where they can go out into their world and feel so good about their own contribution that they love to talk about their value in a way that is predicated on contribution. What's in it from me versus what's in it for me? So element number three is about artfully communicating. And it turns out that we all want to connect with you emotionally before we hear the facts. So I don't know if you notice, I just do this naturally. It's not strategic, it's not persuasive. But when I got up on stage, I just had to tell you how I'm feeling being back here at the Commonwealth Club. It really matters to me to be back here for the fifth time. And I had this emotional connection. Hopefully I connected with some of you because of that. So how many of you have to deliver PowerPoint presentations? I'm sure a lot of hands will go up, of course. So what happens is we launch into the facts before we build emotional connection. And then we wonder why our audience is all glazed over and nobody's listening. So let me give you some tips. Oh, and I want to tell you that this is counterintuitive, that we connect first emotionally with people. And if they decide they like us, then they want to hear the facts, and then we connect rationally. So it's kind of backwards from what most people think it is. And it's really important to understand the all-important emotional connection. Now, remember what I said about strength and warmth and having equal parts of strength and warmth for your brand? Well, it turns out the best way to demonstrate equal parts of strength and warmth are to tell a story about your value. So I teach my clients how to tell a story in 1 minute or less about their own value. And not many people know how to do this off the cuff, and it's not about them. It's not about, oh, I'm Ellen, and I'm the brand commentator for CBS News and the Wall Street Journal. No. It's about what benefit or result have I gotten for my clients. So I'd like someone with a phone and a timer to time me. I'm going to show you. I can't see if there's a second hand on there. Can I have a volunteer to time me? Thank you. Give me a minute on the clock and just a second when I point to you. Give me a minute on the clock if you don't mind. Anyway, I'm going to tell a story of my value, and it's not going to be about me. It's going to be about someone I brought value to, that my brand brought value to. So minute on the clock, or, yes? Okay, so I had this client many, many years ago, Dr. Green, and she was a psychotherapist at a Kaiser hospital. And she was turning 60, and it was her life's dream to be able to have her own shingle out in her own private practice as a psychotherapist. So she hired me to brand her. She came over to my office after work one day. I handed her in those days a brochure, and she picked up the brochure and she looked at it incredulously and she started crying, what Oprah would call the ugly cry. I ran to get tissues. I said, Dr. Green, are you okay? She said, Ellen, you don't understand. I've been a psychotherapist for 30 years. It's my job to really see people, to really get them, and to reflect their value back to them so they could fully appreciate themselves and love themselves. And nobody has ever done that for me until just now. I'm getting better at this. Okay, 51 seconds. Usually I come in at about 58. So that's good. So you can tell a story of your value in a minute or less. People go, oh, that's impossible. Well, I am from New York, and I do talk fast, so we can stretch it out to maybe 70 seconds, if not 60 for you. So, and that's what's so perfect about telling a branding story is it demonstrates those equal parts of strength and warmth, because you can't tell a story without sensory data and people and characters, and you have to be pretty strong to tell a good story and to confidently organize it and tell it. So it turns out, according to the authors in the Harvard research about all of this, of compelling people, that telling a story is the best way to demonstrate strength and warmth, thus demonstrate those hidden qualities of influence. So get really good at storytelling. Instead of telling people how great you are, demonstrate it through third-person stories, as I just did. Element number four is about radiating empathy and likability, being able to sense the feelings and perspectives of others and take an active interest in their concerns. And I love these four keys to likability, and these are from a book called The Likeability Factor by a Bay Area person, Tim Sanders, who was one of the founding people at Yahoo. And here are his four keys to likability. Friendliness, that makes perfect sense. Relevance. For those of you who are a little older in the workforce, like I am, relevance becomes really important, especially in the Bay Area, because, you know, most people in the Bay Area are becoming very young and tech savvy, and that's what we're known for. And if you're a baby boomer like I am, and that stuff has left you in the dust, you will be left in the dust. So it's really important to think about your own relevancy now, and not when it's too late. So I just say that to my older brothers and sisters in this audience here. Gen Xers and millennials don't really have this issue right now, but you will. You will in 20 years. So think about your own relevancy. That's a really important piece of likability too. And empathy, of course, being able to feel other people's feelings and know what they're feeling. And then, of course, there's realness. I can't say enough about authenticity. The most successful brands I know are the most authentic. And we love authenticity. I just saw a smile from one of my clients in the audience, and I love her because of her authenticity. And that's Natalie over there from AAA. So hi, Natalie. I got to embarrass you in front of a whole room of people. Oh, there's something not doing so well on this slide. But likability really matters, and I'll tell you what that slide says. It has a picture of the American Idol judges, and it says that we don't always judge people on their performance. Instead, we judge their performance on how much we like them. So think about that for a second. So it's not necessary that you always be the best and the brightest, but are you pleasant to work with? Are you a collaborator? Are you a likable person? Are you a warm person? Are you an honest person? Do you have integrity? All of those things start to matter. So I'd like to ask this room, do you know the number one reason people buy or choose anything? Shout out some answers. Well, one at a time. Raise your hand. Why do people buy or choose anything? A product, a service, or a person? What is that number one reason?
Reputation.
Reputation's a perfect answer, and it's true, but it's not the number one reason. Yes?
Trust.
Trust is a great answer, but not the number one reason. Yes, sir?
They identify with the brand.
Oh, well, that's so important, and you know that, but that's not the number one answer.
Word of mouth.
No, that's great, too, but not the number one answer.
Hey,
I love that answer, but it's not the number one answer. My timekeeper.
Their friends use it.
Of course we want to do what our friends do. That's very important in branding, but no, it's not the number one. Yes.
Reliability.
We don't want to work with brands that don't work. Of course that's the right answer, but it's not the one answer I'm looking for. Yes. I love it. You're talking about feeling and emotional connection, but no, it's not the number one reason. Yes. I love that too, and that's so right, but not the number one reason.
Likeability.
We know how important that is, but it's not the number one reason. Sir?
Value.
You can't sell something that doesn't have value, but it's not the number one reason. All right, all the way in the back, and then I'll tell you. I love that. We don't want to do things that don't make us feel good, but it's not the number one reason. So do you want to know the number one reason? What's it worth to you? I'll tell you. It's confidence. Confidence is the number one reason people will buy or choose anything, a product, a service, a person, and it works in many different layers. It's not only how confident that person is that you're wanting to work with, it's how confident are you in that choice of that person, because if they don't perform, you're going to look bad. So confidence turns out to be that emotion of confidence, according to Tony Robbins, who's the neurolinguistic programming and communication expert, he says that the emotion of confidence is such a powerful thing that people will do anything to avoid feelings of uncertainty and self-doubt, including not having anything to do with you, including not buying your product or service, not promoting you. So confidence, I cannot say enough about having a brand that exudes confidence. And let me tell you, if your shadow is any one of the three, and if you're a human being, your shadow side is one of those three, clean that stuff up. I work on mine daily, although it always rears its little head when I'm least expecting it. However, clean up that shadow side of yourself, because you don't want someone to not do business with you because you feel unworthy, or because you don't feel good enough, or you don't feel lovable or likable enough. So the way I do branding is very deep. It's about taking a real deep dive, a real self-inquiry into yourself, warts and all, and understanding that personal impact you have on those people out in the world you most want to influence. And I have to tell you something, the smartest people I work with, and I attract a lot of smart people, they're usually clueless about their own personal impact. And they're always shocked when they have their value reflected back to them, both for good and for not so good. So just wanted to suggest that. Element 6 is about serving as a leader. And the one point I want to make about serving as a leader is that leaders are CEOs and presidents, male or female, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where they come from, what part of the world. But this is according to Daniel Goleman. CEOs and presidents are 7 times more, they have 7 times more emotional self-control. So I want to tell you that men, when they lose control emotionally, get angry typically, and they say things they wish they hadn't said, and they somehow sometimes violently self-express in words or actions, and women tend to cry. And that's very disempowering as well for a whole other reason. So I would say one of the best things you can do for your personal brand is to keep your emotional reactivity in check. And I'm laughing at myself right now, and I can't even make eye contact with a person in this audience, because I lost my emotional control not that long ago with this person in this audience, and I'm just give you a hint, they're on this side of the room, so I'm looking over there. So that's all I'll say. So I vigilantly work on myself too, and we're all works in progress. And that's all I'll say about that, moving right along. Leaders need people skills. And number 7 I want to get to, because this is one of my favorite elements. It's about maintaining presence. And this world we live in is so distracted. Most people are, especially in this area of the Bay Area, people are walking down the street, texting, looking at their cell phones, walking into telephone poles, walking into people. And I'm going to tell you something tonight that can save your life. And I'm so glad you're all here. This is almost the end of my talk, and then we're going to have a 15-minute Q&A. So think about some questions that you have. But I'm going to tell you something about your own presence or lack of it that can really save your life. And I tend to be dramatic, but I am not even being dramatic about this. Okay? Are you ready? I think the room got very present all of a sudden. Not all of a sudden. This is a very present group, as a matter of fact. So let me tell you first about the 3 things that keep you from being present. And I want you to think about, as I'm going through each of these 3 predispositions, that you have, or these 3 ways of not being present, I should say, that you have a predisposition towards one of these ways more than the other 2. And we'll take a poll in a minute so you can see how the room divides itself. So there's first the distracted mind. This is the thing that keeps us not present. So it's a busy mind. And I'm just going to read you right from here, which I wish I could if I had my glasses. Your mind races from, I'll just paraphrase, your mind races from one thing to another. You're in this constant, perpetual sense of distraction. We are all busy-minded. I'm sure you have found yourself driving on the freeway and then you go, oh my God, I was so deep in thought, I forgot I was even driving. That's a distracted mind. Or when you're sitting across from me and nodding in agreement, but you're really thinking about the things you're gonna stop and buy at Trader Joe's on your way home, and you really haven't heard a word of what I'm saying, but you're making great eye contact, and you're nodding your head, and you're right there with me, but you're not right there. Okay, so that's a busy mind. We get that one. So some of you, that's your predisposition. You're busy-minded. But let's hear the other 2, because you might change your mind. Okay, the second predisposition or second reason that we're not present, and my point about all 3 of these is that in different situations, I am all 3. Sometimes I'm busy-minded, sometimes I'm worrying-minded, and sometimes I'm critical-minded. But I do have a predisposition to one of them, and I'll reveal it in a second. So the worrying-minded people are always putting their attention on precisely the things they do not want to happen. They are constantly thinking about all of the horrible things that could happen at any moment to them and their beloveds. And they're just, or they get an illness and they go online and they look it up and, oh my God, I've got stage 4 something or other. Okay, those are the worriers of the world. And I have to tell you, worriers, you're bringing to you exactly what you're worrying about happening to you. So stop the worrying. Clear your mind. Third way of not being present, critical minded. You judge everything you see against everything you know. You run running commentary when you're stopped at a light and people are walking by your car and you're thinking, oh my God, she'd be cute if she lost a few pounds, and oh, he's a good looking guy, and oh, you know, whatever. It's just this constant commentary. Or you're sitting in a meeting and you're thinking, why is she wearing that? You know, I hope you're not sitting in this meeting thinking that. Anyway, so find yourself here. Which one of these are you? Are you constantly judging things? Are you constantly running commentary and judgments? That would make you a critical-minded person. Is your attention more often than not on the very things you do not want to happen? Or are you so distracted you don't even know which one you are because you haven't heard a word of what I just said? So let's take a poll just for the fun of it. How many of you think of yourselves, and again, you're all 3 of these situationally, we all are, but you're predominantly one of these ways. So raise your hand if you're a busy-minded person. Wow, that's a little more than I usually see, San Francisco. Okay, well, we do live in the tech environment here. Okay. I will tell you, I usually see a third, and a third, but I already know I'm not going to see that because we have so many busy-minded people here. So I'm really glad you're honest. Thank you, busy-minded people, for self-identifying. And how many of you are worriers? Now, the worriers don't raise their hand very high because they're worried about what you'll think of them. So they're harder to see. So worriers, break out of the mold and raise your hands high and be proud of your worrying. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you for taking a risk, you worriers. And then how many of you are members of my club? See, I'm great at branding all of you because I'm so critical. I can see everything that's not right with you and everything that's ultimately fantastic about you. And I love moving up the things that are fantastic about you and receding those things that are not so fantastic about you and highlighting your genius, but putting aside that shadow. So I'm really good at that because I'm a critical-minded person. But ask my two ex-husbands, not so great. Just saying. Hoping three's the charm. If you want free branding the rest of your life, come see me. Okay. So, all right. Someone just got that a little more slowly. Okay, so how many of you are in my club and critical-minded? Okay, welcome to my world. Thank you very much. Okay, typically it's a third, and a third in any country I go to, no matter where I go. But gosh, I haven't been on my home turf for a while. You guys are more busy-minded than most, so there you go. I'm just here to tell you that. Oh, I forgot to tell you what could kill you about this. Oh my God, I forgot to give you my information. I almost let you out of here, and it could have harmed your life. So do you want to know what could happen for all three of these? So you busy-minded people, you're the type A's of the world, you are so much more likely to have a heart attack than I am because you have circulation issues. And think about this. Some of you are too young to know this. Some of you people who are my age might know this already. Okay, you worriers are probably like my 88-year-old mother. You get a cold and it never goes away because it settles in your respiratory system and then you have a hacking cough for 6 months. So you have respiratory issues, you worriers. And I see some people nodding in agreement. Some of you will let this sink in and you'll see it later. And then the people who are critical-minded, hey, I hate to tell you this, but we don't even have a physical malady to worry about. Or not, we don't want to worry about anything. Let me get that straight. Okay, but we don't have a physical malady, us critical-minded people, because we're the perfectionists of the world. And we want to see everything nice and neat and perfect. And guess what? The world is totally imperfect. So we are forever disappointed. And because of that, we are more likely to have depression issues than the rest of the population. So clean up your act, get more present, get healthier, and have a better life. That's why my book's called Branded for Life, not just for your business. Element number 8, my last element, is about authentically projecting your true self. And I do a lot of work, as I said, in corporate America, and there are a lot of phonies running around corporate America, and there's a lot of phonies running around the universe. So people feel really good when they can be their authentic selves. And we love people when they're authentic. And we want people to be authentic. And the way to have an authentic life is to first get that way yourself. And you'll start attracting more authenticity into your own life. So a person's willingness and preparedness to expose their feelings, their vulnerabilities, and their thoughts actually makes them more emotionally intelligent. And thus, they more naturally project their authenticity. So I'm going to close with a story about the famous artist Picasso to illustrate everything I've said tonight in this one story. And you already know how much I love storytelling because of that strength and warmth thing going on. So here's my story about Picasso. Picasso was at a seaside resort with one of his many mistresses back in the day. And there was a lady at the next table who said to her girlfriend, "Oh my God, that's the famous artist Picasso. I wonder if I bring over my napkin, if he'll just scribble something on it, and I'll pay him whatever he thinks it's worth." And her girlfriend looked at her like she was crazy, and the next thing you know, she's at Picasso's table. She said, "Would you please scribble something on my napkin, and I'll pay you whatever you think it's worth?" He said, "Sure, no problem." He scribbles, he hands it to her, and he goes, "That will be $30,000. She said, "$30,000? That took you 3 seconds." To which Picasso, very charismatically and confidently, replied back, "No, my dear, that took me 30 years. So how much is your talent and value worth, and how long has it taken you to accrue all of it? Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your time.
At this point in the program, I want to remind our audience here at the Commonwealth Club and on the radio that we're listening to Ellen Loyen, who was with us today on the subject of 8 elements to transform your personal brand, career, and life. Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's just time for one question. Who gets to be the one to ask the question tonight? Please come to the mic.
Ellen, what was the most important self-branding change that you made?
It's on? Yeah. Okay. I really believe that all of the things, I have spent a fortune, maybe you'll look at me and think, God, it's not working, but I have spent a fortune on my own psychological and emotional development. Self-awareness. I've studied with the best of them. I read a lot of books. I've had therapy. I know myself. And here's the advantage of that. Because when you're in an uneven interaction with somebody, and you know yourself, and you know your own predispositions, and you know your own shadows, you also know how to, you also know where you stop and they start. And I actually, at this stage in my life, it's not that I don't get into trouble. I still do. But it doesn't last very long, and it doesn't damage relationships. I'm able to own my piece of it and say to someone I might be in an uneven or uncomfortable interaction with, oh my God, I can see why I created this reaction in you. I see what I did over here because of my own predispositions when I'm not feeling fully, you know, in myself, that sometimes when I'm feeling insecure or I'm afraid, I react to, and that is one of my problems, emotional reaction. I'll just be honest with this group. And a lot of you know me, or some, not a lot of you, but some of you know me. I can be very emotionally reactive. Instead of, you know, I'm one of those ready, fire, aim people. So I needed to learn how to step back, and I'm not great yet. I'm still a work in progress, but I don't really take my marbles and go home and have fights with people. Even family members. I'm actually getting along with my 88-year-old narcissistic mother, and we are in a total love fest. So the more work I do on myself, I love what Wayne Dyer says, as we change, I'm paraphrasing, as we change, the people around us seem to change, but they're not really changing. They're changing their reaction to us, and when we clean up our stuff, we don't have as much crap going on in our lives. So I have much less drama in my life than I've ever had, and I love it that way. So I would say working on myself was the one thing I did the most for my brand. Oh, thank you. I appreciate the question.
Again, I want to thank Ellen Loyen for her comments here today. We also want to thank our audience here at the club, as well as our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thank you all for coming.